So I used to work in the city. I had a bit of a third life crisis when I turned 29. My partner, she was traveling around Asia. I just joined her in Vietnam on one of her stops. We jumped on a bus going up through Ho Chi Minh City, up through the center of Vietnam. And at the start of this bus journey, an American traveler kind of sat next to me, just on my left. And he asked me what I did. I explained I wasn't too happy with my job. And he basically said something that changed my life. He said, well, if you're not happy, you should do the rocking chair test, which is essentially to imagine sitting in your rocking chair at the age of 90 and think about what's your legacy in the world, who you've helped, have you left the world in a better place, who's going to remember you, and for why. And that was a pretty profound moment at the kind of the start of a 18-hour bus journey, 30 minutes in, and I was listening to all those questions and said, my God, no, I've not done anything that's actually going to make a significant difference. If I die tomorrow, no one's going to remember me. There's no actual, I've not left the world in a better place, you know? So that really struck me hard.
Everyone has ambitions. To start their own business, to lose weight, to launch a podcast. But for most of us, those ambitions are still on the to-do list. We'll get round to them one day. But some people overcome procrastination. That thing you'd love to do, they knew the risks, but said screw it and just did it anyway. On the Screw It, Just Do It podcast, I'm on a mission to answer one simple question. How do you get to where you want to be? Joining me are inspirational entrepreneurs, sports stars, entertainers, and authors who took the leap. They became the people they wanted to be. They did what they always wanted to do. In this series of revealing, challenging, and often surprising conversations, they might just help you discover how to do it too.
Welcome to another episode of Screw It, Just Do It with me, Alex, and my very special guest this week. Well, I'm going to do things a little bit differently this week. So, you know how we've hit over 500 episodes and we're coming up to 6 years this May 2023? Well, last week I was interviewed for two different podcasts and the same question cropped up. Alex, what's your favorite episode from Screw It, Just Do It? I know the answer without having to think about it. It's still episode 39, The Rocking Chair Test with Jamal Easel, the founder of Change Please. And I thought, let's re-release that episode when we hit 6 years, because there can't be many of you, and correct me if I'm wrong, DM me, email me, let me know by whatever means possible if you have been a listener from May 2017, from episode one with Stephen Bartlett onwards. But I don't think there could be that many of you who are still here nearly 6 years later from when I started. So I thought, why wait? Share the episode now. I've got two other episodes recorded that I could put out. But you know what? And no offense to either of the people I interviewed, this is a special episode. It really is. If you don't know who Jamal is or who Change Please is, you'll listen and find out. So Jamal is the founder of Change Please, which essentially uses coffee to tackle homelessness by training homeless people to become baristas and providing them with a London living wage, housing, a bank account, therapy, and support. They sell coffee across London through mobile vans. That's how they started. They're stocked in Sainsbury's, and they're now stocked in Australia, and through a very small part, for those of you who don't know, I used to work for Virgin Atlantic for nearly 17 years before I started on this entrepreneurial journey back in 2009, and have some contacts at Virgin Atlantic. So managed to get Jamal in front of them to have a conversation, and he smashed the doors in. He blew the bloody doors off. Next thing you know, Change Please coffee is being served across all Virgin Atlantic airplanes across the world. So he did an amazing job in his pitch to Virgin Atlantic. His Change Please coffee was on Virgin trains as well, stocked in all these amazing supermarkets as well. And you'll hear how, through a chance encounter on Richard Branson's Necker Island, that the future is one of hope and promise. We talk about the rocking chair test, regularly reviewing and celebrating, networking, as well as rocket ships and parachutes. Stay tuned for that one. I think you're going to really, I know you're going to really, really enjoy this. And that's why I thought, why save this? This is my favorite ever episode of Screw It, Just Do It. This is me and Jamal Easel, the founder of Change Please. Screw It, Just Do It, Jamal Easel.
I understand you came up with the idea originally for the business whilst on a trip to Vietnam. Can you tell me a little bit more about what happened and how you came across the idea?
Yeah, sure. So I used to work in the city. I had a bit of a third life crisis when I turned 29. My partner, she was traveling around Asia. I just joined her in Vietnam on one of her stops. We jumped on a bus going up through Ho Chi Minh City, up through the center of Vietnam. And at the start of this bus journey, an American traveler kind of sat next to me, just on my left. And he asked me what I did. I explained I wasn't too happy with my job. And he basically said something that changed my life. He said, well, if you're not happy, you should do the rocking chair test, which is essentially to imagine sitting in your rocking chair at the age of 90 and think about what's your legacy in the world, who you've helped, have you left the world in a better place, who's going to remember you, and for why. And that was a pretty profound moment at the kind of the start of a 18-hour bus journey, 30 minutes in, and I was listening to all those questions and said, my God, no, I've not done anything that's actually going to make a significant difference. If I die tomorrow, no one's going to remember me. There's no actual, I've not left the world in a better place, you know? So that really struck me hard. And while everyone else was asleep on the bus, I was kind of bolt upright thinking about my life and what I need to do to make changes. Wow. So then a couple of weeks later, we went to a place in Vietnam called Hoi An. It's kind of in the center east. And on the last day there, we stumbled across this kind of silent tea house, which essentially was a tea house that was run by deaf and mute ladies who had no other opportunities in their village, and all either deaf or mute. And they got together and created this really incredible space. And the only rule in that space is that you're just silent. And it was full of tourists, and it was just silent. And I just thought, oh my God, this is incredible. Kind of, you know, you're able to do business and good at the same time. And in 29 years at that time, I just thought that was a completely alien thought to me. It was all about previously about accumulating assets, making money, investments, you know, pension, what am I going to do in my retirement, all that kind of thing. And so I left and I said, right, I'm going to set up a silent tea house in Clapham when I get back to England. And I kind of 5 minutes later thought, this is going to fail. I hate Clapham. I don't like tea, and I don't really like silence. This isn't really the start of a good business. really started to think about my connection to any beneficiary groups. I used to rent my properties to people that were to councils, and then they used to rent the properties themselves, sublet them to people that were homeless in emergency accommodation. And I thought, inadvertently, I'm already renting to people that are homeless. If I could find a way of giving them a job at the same time, then this is one small step to kind of reducing homelessness. And that's where the idea came from. Instead of tea, it was coffee. And we came back to London. I saw a homeless person with a cardboard sign saying, change please. And then a few days later, I went to a Banksy exhibition where Banksy's got a bit of street art with a homeless person sitting on the street saying, with their hand out, saying, keep your coins, I want change. And that was it. I just, for the first time, I realized the double meaning behind the terms change please that we all hear.
Yeah.
People who are homeless in the streets asking us when they're asking us for money, but they're also asking us for change potentially, you know, in society. So I decided to call it change please. And I started the journey.
And just talk me through sort of timeline. So what year was that, and how long are we since that initial moment in Vietnam?
So that initial moment was on the 24th of April, 2014. Sorry, 2013. Apologies. And I joined the School of Social Entrepreneurs. And that was in February, 2014. Mm-hmm. And then we opened our first social enterprise called Old Spike Roastery, which is in Peckham, in October 2014. And we launched Change Please in partnership with The Big Issue in November 2015.
Okay. And taking that back to the original part of the story, if you were now in the rocking chair, how much happier would you feel that you're actually making a change, or indeed have made change?
I mean, it's completely incomparable. I mean, the most amazing thing that's happened in this journey is from having an idea, which is something that you just sketch out on paper, and then actually seeing the idea come to life, but that could come to life in any kind of form of business. You know, you could set up a website, you could sell your first product. But in our case, seeing somebody, I didn't have any experience of homelessness or know anybody really that was living on the streets, you know. So I didn't really know all of the areas that we would need to make a change to their life. But actually seeing how the sale of coffee in our case is making a difference to someone getting their keys for the first time for their new flat, or to being paid the living wage, or to get their bank account, all those issues which they're struggling with, all coming about through the sale of coffee, just was such an incredible moment. So therefore, for me, being able to look back now and saying, actually, firstly, this model's worked in that first instance, but we're growing at such a speed that it's making, on a day-by-day basis, a real difference to people's lives. And that, you know, if that rate of growth continues and we spread across the UK like we're doing, to the US, to Australia, and so on and so forth, that real difference it's going to make to people's lives internationally who are homeless, just through the sale of coffee, could be a massive thing, which, you know, personally, when I look back at the age of 90 in my rocking chair, would be something that I'm proud of. If I look back today, if it all ended today, then I'd still be very, very proud, just probably a little bit more tired than when I first started.
No, that's awesome to hear, because I know, you know, far too often, and speak to so many people, we're all striving to plan, to plan out the next year, plan out the next 3 years, the 5 years, and it, you know, actually taking time out to review what you've done and actually give yourself a pat on the back and celebrate that you've got this far is so far. So few people actually do that, that it's nice to hear.
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest challenges that I face personally. Instead of just completely living my life by my diary and having new meetings and new opportunities and new rates of growth, you know, or kind of opportunities that come into our inbox, you know, taking a step back and just actually acknowledging what's happened is really important, because just for your own mental health and your own ability to kind of refocus,
yeah,
and being a bit more mindful about your current situation and what you've actually achieved, which then helps to give you the energy to kind of jump onto the next phase. This year has just felt completely like it's just been kind of almost a bit of a snowball, where you haven't really had a chance to look back. And I think that's something that I really want to improve next year, and just look back at how each month or each couple of weeks, what we've achieved, what we've done, and take a moment to really appreciate what's happened.
And do you still feel in charge given what you've done this year, or do you feel that you're kind of in a rocket ship and you're been just flying along as part of the ride?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. That rocket ship is definitely there. We're kind of sitting in it, but we've fortunately built up a really wonderful team around us. For example, the founder of Coffee Republic, for example, the CFO of Jimmy Choo and LK Bennett, and some just, you know, a board which is just absolutely first class, mm-hmm. and leaders of their previous kind of, or the industry that they've come from. And what they're doing is helping to make sure that rocket ship almost has parachutes on it and is going in the right direction. So the growth and the speed is something that we always want to keep, and we want to make sure we're still entrepreneurial in how we grow. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the trajectory that we're on is in the right direction, and we have, to use the same analogy, that parachute around us, which is kind of there in case that entrepreneurial decision doesn't really work out. So I think, sorry if I've stretched the rocket ship analogy, but
you got a couple of rocket ships, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that we don't want to slow down. We want to make sure that the decisions that we're doing are the correct ones, and having the right people around us who have got that experience is really allowing us to do that.
And what stage did you take on board, so start building the team around you? So maybe talk a little bit about the board that we're just speaking about now, and then the actual team, you know, feet on the ground team, as well as like the board members. How early on did you go from one man band?
The first, say, 4 or 5 months was all about us learning what we need to do, who we are, what's our kind of position within the coffee market. And I think slowly there's a bit of a tendency to kind of see the first people that come along who, you know what they're talking about, and try and get them involved to give you support. And I just wanted to kind of hold back a little bit and make sure that actually the people that do join the board are people that are genuinely going to invest time, energy, relationships, and also add value, as opposed to coming and doing this as partly a vanity project.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that we've grown so quickly, because we've chosen some really incredible people who have joined our organization to kind of, and it's just, you know, for example, the person who was the previous CFO of Jimmy Choo and then the COO of LK Bennett to now work with us kind of 3 days a week and donate her time for free. And it is just, you know, incredible for us, you know, from a financial perspective and managing our finances. So it's making sure the people that come on are the right people and they're actually going to invest time. And that for me was absolutely fundamental in our growth. I'd seen situations in the past where especially social businesses were surrounded by people who wanted to help and do good, but they ended up being a slight strain on the business because you also have to look after them as individuals and their personalities. But, you know, just we really tried to make sure we took the time and assessed everybody that wanted to join and really selected the best of the best to kind of be part of what we're trying to do.
And was that people you reaching out to those individuals or them coming across you through the press or through contacts?
It was a combination of both, actually. So within the social enterprise space, there's so many organizations that offer you mentors and also in the entrepreneurial space as well, not just the social entrepreneur space, but offer you mentors. So we're always surrounded by really amazing people. That's for starters. And then I think because we naturally got quite a lot of press when we launched and a lot of attention, we won a BBC documentary, all those kind of things meant that the incoming opportunities and relationships was there as well.
Yeah.
And so for us, it was a combination of both. It was people hearing about us, but also through our networks, other people's networks, and the story of, you know, being able to do good through, in our case, coffee, reached a lot of people, and then the networks grew and we just found and selected the best people out of that. And then now we've got two boards. One is our main board, so our trustees, and then the other side is our advisory board, which are people which come along and give us advice and directions and strategy, but might not have a voting share, so to speak.
Okay. And as I understand it, you've had funding from a number of different angles. So Virgin Startup, also The Big Issue and Comic Relief. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. So I'll start with Virgin Startup. We'd made an order with our manufacturers for all of our coffee vans to start with. We ordered 8 initially, and we were missing. We had funding. The funder pulled out because they didn't think the project would work. So then we went to Virgin Startup and said, "Look, we've got an unrealistically short amount of time to get this done. This is what we want to do. I don't personally have a huge background in coffee, but do you believe in the idea? Will you support us?" And out of nowhere, they came, they supported us. They brought people in to kind of help with the business plan and really kind of give us the guidance that we needed. And the money was sent to us literally the day, the deadline of the day before the manufacturer was going to stop production.
Wow.
Of our van. So, and then the vans got made and we went to press on the 23rd of November, 2015. And on that day, on that week, we had everyone from Sky News, CNN, Russia Today, BBC, ITV, all coming on that day. And it was, if it wasn't for that money from Virgin and then paying for the final installment of deliveries, we would not have been able to open that day. We put a week afterwards, but we would have lost all that press attention and all that kind of opportunity. So it literally all worked out perfectly.
I didn't realize it was that tight.
It was absolutely that tight. And wow. It wasn't Virgin's fault. It was our fault coming in at the last minute.
Yeah. But
they pulled out all the stops to make it happen.
Oh.
And it was absolutely fantastic for us. And then we've got money from Comic Relief, which has been phenomenal, and money from Big Issue Invest, and also some other organizations like the Charities Aid Foundation that have helped us along the way with loans and grants to help our growth and development.
And have you ever met John Bird from the Big Issue as part of the journey so far?
Yes, quite a few times. I actually was in his, I stayed at his house in Cambridge a few months back.
He's
such an incredible inspiration, really. You know, he's obviously now Lord Bird, and he's what he set up 25 years ago as part of The Big Issue has obviously stood the test of time, and it's made a massive difference to vendors all over the country, and also that the street paper model is being replicated all over the world. So yeah, he's an absolute inspiration for being able to take an idea and grow it to how successful The Big Issue's been now.
No, I've been liaising with his team about him. One, he wants to do an event down where we're based in Bournemouth, and two, speak at one of the Virgin Startup events. So that's when I was thinking, I could potentially get you both to do the same event because that would be pretty powerful. I know he's based in London now, but he's specifically looking to do something down in the southwest. So that's when I had an inkling that I'd maybe ask yourself as well nearer the time.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I don't think he's got a huge amount of charisma and an incredible personality and a wonderful story. So hopefully I can live up to those standards.
Yeah. So just tell our audience a little bit about the kind of rapid growth that you've gone from literally getting those initial vans 2 years ago for London and where you're at now. Because I understand recently that you've managed to get into Sainsbury's and about to go with Ocado as well.
Yes, exactly. So we've now got 17 sites, which we operate in a mixture of offices, our own vans. We've just got now a new contract with Transport for London, where we're actually going to be opening sites in tube stations and train stations. And we're employing 50% of our staff who are sleeping homeless on Transport for London sites. So someone that's been sleeping on a bus or a train or in a tube station, you know, we're going to go out and find those people and employ them in those TfL sites. So we've had a huge amount of support from TfL and also the mayor's office. And that's kind of a huge growth plan for us moving forward. We sell coffee into offices like groups like UBS, Bank of New York, the Virgin headquarters in Paddington. And it's essentially, you know, where there's an opportunity to sell coffee, we're providing an alternative to what's already on the market, but coffee that can taste the same, cost the same, but also changes people's life at the same time. And I think that's a message that people are adopting quite quickly. So the coffee, the office market is growing really quickly. Working with a wide range of caterers is really fantastic for us. But also getting our coffee into supermarkets has really helped to increase the scale of growth. So we're in 375 Sainsbury stores selling change piece coffee bags, with 100% of the profits going to reduce homelessness across the UK. And also so the coffee's won a great taste award. So it's doing good, but it's without compromise. Because I think that's one of the first things that people think about, you know, oh, this is taste, this does good, but, you know, it's just, I'm just doing it for charity. It's not going to taste good. So, you know, even the Sainsbury's buyer at the time was shocked at how good it tastes. And with the great taste award now, it really kind of proves that you can do good, but also not compromise at the same time.
Yeah. And if you don't get that product right, then you're not going to believe in it yourself, are you? And the person buying it is going to feel slightly compromised as well, I'd imagine.
Exactly. And what we saw was people will pick up the bags for the first time because of the social message, or it will get us listed because of the social message, but it will mean that customers won't come back. If they take it home, they don't like it, they just won't buy. And our growth of sale is just absolutely fantastic at the moment. The buyer is super happy. And now we're very close to finalizing talks with Ocado. We're speaking with Waitrose and a range of other supermarkets to stock our coffee and provide an ethical alternative and a socially ethical alternative to what's already on the shelves.
If you enjoy listening to podcasts and you feel inspired to start your own, you can get a copy of my free podcast launch checklist by going to podpreneur.co.uk/launch checklist. And if you'd like the hands-on help and support of myself and my team at my podcast agency Podpreneur, we've been producing podcasts with purpose internationally since 2019. Just drop me a line about your podcast idea to alex@podpreneur.co.uk. But if you prefer to do it all yourself, but with my guidance, you can join the waitlist for my upcoming podcast academy by going to podpreneur.co.uk/academy.
It's awesome. And I also believe environmental sustainability is high on your priorities, with solar panels on the vans, compostable cups and coffee grounds being converted to biofuel as well.
Yeah, so we thought it would be slightly disingenuous if we just focused on our part of the supply chain. So we really concentrated on where the beans come from. So initially we put a lot of emphasis on that, and we now buy coffee from farmers in, for example, Peru, which support women who are victims of domestic abuse, farmers in Tanzania that support llama victims. Coffee then comes into the UK, we import bought it, and it's then roasted by people that are homeless at our sister company, Old Spike Roastery. And then when we receive the coffee, obviously, you know what we do in terms of supporting people at homelessness through selling the beans and selling the coffee to the public. But we also try to make sure that when we're selling that coffee, the way we do it is so it is environmentally sustainable as well. So as you said, we use 100% compostable cups, we solar panels on our vans, and the waste grounds are converted into biofuel. So literally where the beans come from, the farmers that we're supporting, all the way up to where the ground, the waste coffee grounds go to. We've tried to make sure that that environmental and socially focused sustainability is evident in our supply chain.
And I don't know, as a question, getting you started on this, but do you ever think Starbucks and Costa could ever be doing the same thing? Because if someone can do it, everybody can do it, surely.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the thing with Starbucks and Costa and Pret and these organizations have essentially paved the way for groups like organizations like us to be able to do what we're doing. Mm. And if they hadn't created the coffee market and the interest in coffee like that has been created in the UK, you know, we'd be selling pizzas or confectionery on the side of streets or in supermarkets. So they've really been able, they've created that marketplace, which has meant that people have the interest in coffee, and we've just chosen to also add elements of environmental and social sustainability to what we do. It's probably financially difficult for them. It's to be able to do, you know, all of our surplus, so our profits, is reinvested into the additional cost that comes into buying a different cup or to paying £10.20 instead of £7.20 in wages, you know, per hour. So, you know, that means that we're essentially not making a surplus, we're not making a profit, which therefore doesn't pay any dividends or go back to any shareholders. So realistically, it's almost impossible for, unless groups like Starbucks and Pret a Manger became not-for-profits, for them to do that as well. Mm. However, you know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. So I think there is a space for everybody. And the more that they grow and they develop and they lead the way in creating new flavors and taste profiles that we can offer a different alternative, it kind of creates a different space in the market for us. Mm. So I think there's room for both organizations to be able to do what we're doing. And also, if they do want to adopt the living wage and pay £10.20 instead of what they're paying at the moment, then I'm sure their employees would appreciate that. If they wanted to convert their waste coffee grounds into biofuel, then I'm sure their customers would appreciate that. But that's it's a lot of credit needs to go to give them to what they've done in the coffee space already, I reckon.
That's a great answer. And something I wanted to ask you on before we sign off is when you attended the Disrupting for Good leadership gathering on Necker Island, just wanted to ask you what, after attending that, what does disruption mean to you, and who did you meet, and what kind of businesses and entrepreneurs were there?
Yeah, so that was almost 6 months after we initially launched, and we got the invitation to go to Necker Island to mentoring from Richard Branson at the leadership gathering that he put on. And we did a talk on change bodies and what our ambitions for growth were, and the people that were invited were all just absolutely incredible people, from people that are leading the way in global climate change to people that are trying to stop the death penalty in the US, and are speaking about how we can do business for good. Really, it was just an amazing opportunity to be even in the same room as those types of people. And those individuals putting their minds together to try and make a difference is absolutely incredible. You know, from a network perspective, from a financial perspective, from a advice perspective, for us, it was absolutely incredible. And it led to kind of opportunities for us in the US. And we're now looking for sites in New York and in San Francisco as well. And we have a partner in Australia that's going to be opening Change3 sites in Perth. So that opportunity was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, getting mentoring from Richard Branson, I mean, fortunately, as I mentioned before, we get offers for a huge amount of mentors. And, you know, just spending time we spent with him, you know, he instantly got the concept and, you know, within 5 minutes had ideas and suggestions and opportunities, which were just instantly flowing through him. And that level of entrepreneurialism, which he embodies, it was just evident instantly. And I think that something was just amazing for me to see in someone who's had that much experience and can be able to give that much advice and support to somebody who's just at the start of their journey, which is absolutely incredible. So that whole experience of going to Necker, and obviously it's a shame what's happened to it now after the storms. It was just such an incredible, beautiful space, but it was just a memory that we'll never forget, and has really helped us to launch pad into where we are today.
Yeah, awesome. And how did the connection come up with the States then, with America? What's the story there?
So it was actually through three different attendees, actually. It was kind of a few private family foundations who were there on the day and weren't mentioning names. And it was, you know, as you can probably imagine, they have incredible contacts. So we were introduced to the departments of the mayor's office in City Hall in New York, and then also the equivalents in San Francisco, in California. Mm-hmm. And I think that opportunity to kind of do good and reduce homelessness in those states where they have what they call a state of emergency for homelessness, but tap into, I think there has become a little bit of apathy with charity, where people are, you know, wondering whether or not they should donate and give money to charity, and not seeing where that next, where the money's actually going to be used, and is it being used in operational costs, or is it going to be used directly at source? And I think there's become a little bit of apathy to do with charity that we've seen recently. But if you can go and purchase a product, which you would have purchased anyway, in our case, coffee, and there isn't any compromise on the quality, but you're doing good at the same time, then I think that's a model which taps into entrepreneurialism and the capitalist kind of values that exist in the US. And I think that's the that's what we've seen so far. Those opportunities are quite abundant. And also tapping into the family foundations and the philanthropic drive that exists in the US to try and help us grow into that market. Because, you know, the problem in the UK is huge, but the problem in the US is just insane. It's just far more visible and, you know, much bigger numbers than we could ever imagine in the UK, which is for us a positive thing. And therefore, we think this model can really heavily scale in the US market.
Mm, no, I agree with you. I mean, you know, having flown back and forth to the States for 16 and a half years with Virgin Atlantic, and seeing San Francisco's got a massive problem. I remember Washington, absolutely phenomenal as well. And I'm sure New York is on an unprecedented scale given the size of the population there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, we're not going to solve that problem. We're not going to get close. But I think it's a way of getting the ball moving and setting a tone and telling people that there's a different way of, not to preach. We've just, if someone types into Google, homeless person saves woman from drowning in the Thames, something like that, I think it will come up instantly. We've just employed a guy who was an executive chef in New York. He trained at Kemp's College, which is one of the best culinary colleges in New York State. And he worked as an executive chef. He came to the UK with his family in search for a job. He found a job here, which was a fantastic job. He then lost his wife and his daughter, and he became heavily depressed. I mean, rock bottom depressed. I mean, he still tells me the story now. That was in 2010. He ended up on the streets. He lost his job, lost his home, ended up on the streets. And then in 2011, he heard a lady screaming as she jumped into the Thames. And she was screaming as she was falling in. And he took off his clothes. It was icy waters. He dived in. He essentially saved her life, you know. And I was thinking about the other day, you know, if someone's dived in to kind of end their life and you're following them to try and save their life, you're putting yourself in incredible peril to do that. So in 2012, he was given the George Award for Bravery by the Queen, which is the highest civilian award that any civilian can get. He was also given the High Commendation by Prince Philip, also at Buckingham Palace, which hasn't been given to anybody in 43 years. And, you know, he's a real life hero. He's got the George Award for Bravery. That's the highest award for heroic award that you can be given. And even though that happened, and he was in every newspaper from the Times, the Metro, the Evening Standard, he was still homeless, and he spent from 2012 to 2017 being homeless on the streets around Borough Market, around London Bridge area, sleeping on the Nancy stairs. He had people urinate on him. He had people pour alcohol on him, and he is a real life hero. The word literally is bounded around so much these days, but it could not be more true for him. He's, you know, literally a hero. And we just walk past those people, not knowing who they are, what their background is, who they've helped, are they a father, or are they an accountant, are they a doctor, are they a hero in Dan's case. And we put everybody in the same box as another person that might be dependent on drugs or alcohol, because as soon as they sit on that street. So I think and now he's working for us, and he's an incredibly valuable member of our team, adds a huge amount of value, and also working as a chef in one of our restaurants and also as a barista. So the idea is if we can try and change that mentality of people when they walk past somebody on the street, to think about who that person is and what value they can still offer to our society, that's where we deliver change. Not necessarily by all of the individual people that we help, because we can't help everybody, but if everybody that sees what we're doing thinks, okay, well, that homeless person is now serving somebody coffee and they're doing a great job and had a really wonderful experience with them, when you walk past that person next on the street and you see them asking you for money, what is that person's background? What has made them get to such a desperate state? Yeah, it could be drugs, it could be alcohol, which has forced them to kind of be able to cope, but what is it that brought them to that situation? How can we give them any support? And I think that's the message that we want to try and share in the UK, in the US, and try and change the stigma around homelessness. And that's how we deliver change, not just from the people that we help, but by the people that our customers go and then see and try and affect other people's lives that are on the street.
That is one hell of a story.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's pretty amazing. So
I can't believe he was homeless for all those years after what he did. I'm sure everybody listening will think the same thing, but I think that's a great place place to leave the story. I love your business. I love what you're doing, and you have come a hell of a long way in 2 years. And I love the fact that you are able to look back and appreciate that as well. You know, from a conversation with a random stranger to now being able to help people in multiple countries in many different ways is a great thing. And I think, you know, you said we're not going to solve the problem, but I think, you know, small steps, consistent action, if everybody did the same thing, would be able to solve any myriad number of problems in the world.
Yeah, absolutely right. And just last thing to say, Alex, is, you know, we don't receive any grants or donations. We don't depend on them. We only operate through traded income. And 100% of that traded income goes to reducing homelessness. So if there is anybody that's listening who, you know, they're working in an office that's buying coffee and they want to change to Change Please and Do Good, or if they have any contacts in for sites for us to operate at one of our coffee shops or anything which they feel they see coffee and they think it could change to Change Please, then
please let us know. It's our email address is hello@changeplease.org, and any support to help us continue trading, make more money and reinvest all that money into doing good would be appreciated.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, can I encourage you to follow the show by clicking the plus button in the top right-hand corner of your screen if you're listening by Apple Podcasts, or the follow button on Spotify and other platforms. It means you'll be the first to be notified whenever a new episode goes live. Did you know that nearly half of podcast listeners find a show through searching online? So if you've gotten any value at all, please share this episode with one or more of your friends and make it easy for them to find a podcast you think they'll enjoy. If you'd like to join the Screw It, Just Do It community, go to podpreneur.co.uk/get in touch, sign up to our weekly newsletter and free resources. That's podpreneur.co.uk/get-in-touch. That's podpreneur.co.uk/get-in-touch.